Muddy Knees Media.
Net busting at Wickham, net bulging for Cambridge, nobody's perfect anymore, and Forest done a win. This is the Totally Football League Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello listener, delighted to have your company this week as we trawl through the never-ending narratives of the English Football League. I'm Matt Davis-Adams, yeah, I keep getting work. With me, a trio of football fanatics. Like me, Sam Parkin was head boy at school. Unlike me, his role was largely ceremonial. Also unlike me, Sam played for 10 EFL clubs. How you doing, old boy?
I'm doing well, Matt. Good to see you, hear you.
Likewise. My next guest is closing in on 50,000 Twitter followers. Is he using that platform to promote good causes or to take digs at Spurs? Head to @AdrianJClark to find out. Greetings, Clarky.
Oh, I couldn't resist. I really couldn't resist yesterday. I mean, so many Spurs are going to win the title tweets were knocking around at 3-0. It was just, they were asking for it. So, yeah, pleased to oblige.
And it's a broad grin that you're sporting. Also, back for her second appearance. Not enough time to list all the credits, so I'll just say from BBC London and pretty much every other podcast you listen to. Helping me further the cause of the double-barreled surname is Flo Lloyd-Hughes. Happy birthday, Flo.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was yesterday, but I was working all weekend, so I think this is sort of my fake birthday today where I'm actually at home and getting to relax a little bit.
Are you still of an age whereby a lot of your presents are Queen's Park Rangers themed?
I put it this way, Matt. I'm on the wrong side of 20. That's what I'll tell you. but no QPR themed gifts this year. That's normally a Christmas thing, I think.
Okay, well, not long to wait for that.
Performance of the weekend.
Right, let's kick off in the manner in which has become tradition. It's time for our performance of the weekend. 15 seconds per person to put forth a case for the best EFL showing by a team this weekend. Last time out, it was an overwhelming 61% victory for me and crew Alexandra. To quote the big man, woof. Also, Clarky still to get off the mark. Bergkamp at Arsenal vibes here. So I'm going to let you go first this week, Adrian. You have selected John Yems and our friends at Crawley Town. Your 15 seconds start now.
If you beat the league leaders 4-0, you win performance of the week. That is the rules, I'm afraid. In this case, it's even more of a Stonewall winner because 3 of the 4 goals were absolute beauties. Super sub Max Waters grabbed a brace on debut and John Yems called his players gits.
Yeah, very good. Timing's getting really good. Flo, you've gone for a championship side, namely Barnsley. Your 15 seconds starts now.
Yeah, after having dealt with the departure of Gerhard Struber, fantastic performance to get a point against an informed Bristol City team, against all odds, poor start to the season for Barnsley already, but picking up points against one of the informed sides who I think are also for promotion.
Yeah, just a little bit of an experience showing at the end there. I'm going to go next. Guess who I've chosen? It's Forrest. My 15 seconds start now. Tongue slightly in cheek here, but hey, when you've waited more than 3 months for a win, you'll take it any old way. One in a row now for the two XCCs after Lollipop won in late at Blackburn. 3 points and a first clean sheet in 12 attempts. The king of pragmatism is dead. Long live the king. Fumbled, I would have got it in the 15 seconds there. It's a shame. Oh well, rounding us off, Sam Parkin and Cambridge United. Your 15 seconds start now.
Second 5-0 away win this season, taking them top of League Two. 26 shots, 69% of the ball. This was a chasing experience for Scunny. Paul Mullin onto 7 goals for the season. Harrison Dunk exceptional in his 300th appearance. Mark Bonner 4 defeats in his 20 games in charge.
Good efforts all. Head to @TheTotallyShow on Twitter to vote.
This news just in, listeners. The Athletic is extending its £1 a month offer for all new subscribers, meaning you can get unrivaled analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, plus a brand new breaking news service and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts for just a quid. This deal won't last forever, though, so don't miss out. Sign up today at theathletic.com/leagueshow.
Right, we'll get reviewing matches soon, but since Thursday's show with George and Ali, Project Big Picture was told to do one. The EFL also said, similar to the proposed £50 million bailout that was offered by the Premier League, essentially because it was a crummy offer of £20 million and then £30 million more in loans, and the Championship weren't included. Remember, they wanted £250 million for the EFL and would have got it via Project Big Picture. The offer remains. All EFL clubs can approach the Premier League if they need the cash. Adrian, are the EFL as a whole right to turn their nose up at this, do you think?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's very difficult to turn your nose up at free money, isn't it? Especially when you're in desperate need of it. But yeah, I think they were right to stick to their guns. You've got to be unified as a collective, and to exclude the Championship I thought was a bit harsh. And I get it from Premier League points of view. Championship clubs have bigger revenue streams and are more likely to be their immediate rivals sometime soon. So I get it, but I think you've got to help everybody out. We're all in the same boat here, aren't we, across the EFL? We're all struggling. So, and it was a, you used the phrase crummy. It was a bit tight, wasn't it? I don't think it was going to make a big difference. And look, if £250 million was going to be made available or could potentially be made available, if you play by certain clubs' rules, then surely they've got to stump up more than 20. And also on the spare 30, how is that going to work? You know, did you have to wait for a club literally to be a day away from going bust before you gave them some money or not? How was that going to work? It was just a little bit derisory, I felt. And also on the bottom of the statement from the Premier League clubs, it also said this offer comes, you know, considering we lost a collective £100 million, you know, during lockdown or whatever. I can't remember the exact phrase, but it was basically to say we're short too. So basically take it or leave it. I just felt it was too small an amount.
Flo, Mark Pelleas on Thursday's show said that Tranmere had budgeted for a whole season without crowds. Heard Darren McAntony on the radio saying Peterborough had done something similar, albeit helped by the money they got for Ivan Toney. Do you think if EFL clubs do need this money, it should be means tested to some extent, as in if you're running your football club prudently, then fine, we'll help you. But if you've spent money recklessly, then it's not really the pandemic that is the main cause for you getting in this trouble. And therefore, you know, it's a bit more difficult to justify just handing out cash.
Yeah, definitely. I think where the exception might need to be is if it's almost through no fault of your own, which is kind of a loaded phrase, but if perhaps you had an owner that recently left and you're kind of falling and sinking pretty quickly and you need rescuing that way, then I don't think you should be punished because of the actions of someone who previously owned the club or someone who was running the club. So, but in that sense, I think there should be some exceptions. But broadly speaking, yeah, I don't think there should necessarily be too much support to some of the clubs who don't seem to be taking it that seriously, to be honest. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about transfers, but Cardiff City spending 1.2 million on a loan fee for Harry Wilson and paying part of what is arguably must be the most expensive wages in the Championship. Obviously, okay, they're only paying part of his 60 grand a week, but it seems like I can understand why the general public and others in football are thinking, you know, cry me a river here, because it's a bit like the Premier League not offering that much and people saying, oh, well, you're still willing to spend 70 million quid on a player. At the same time, Championship teams are still, and Forest being one of them, still willing to spend a shed load of money in the hope of getting promoted this season. And that's why I think it, with the Championship, Adrian mentioned it, there is an exceptional case for that league because there's so many different scenarios and situations going on. You've
But Wickham would be on a completely different scale. Preston haven't spent any money. I'm assuming they're just being more sensible than some of the others. You know, should they put themselves in, you know, in a really precarious position? I don't know. I definitely see where you're coming from. It's not a good look, is it, when you're spending that amount of money on a loan fee and then asking for money? I definitely get that.
I think the Championship,
not every club's the same.
The Championship should definitely be means tested in the sense of almost looking at what the outgoings are, not even just how the running of the club is. But for those that are running things sustainably, there should be a reward for that as well, because otherwise, what is the reward? What's the point in being sustainable? Because what are you getting out of it? You're only getting punished now more for your, you know, economic knack.
Sam, lastly on this, do you think that Rick Parry and co rejected this offer thinking, well, there'll be another one to come along which will be better, and it's a bit of the brinkmanship that we spoke about with Project Big Picture?
Yeah, I would think so, but there seems to be so much infighting between the hierarchy at various organisations. I don't really know what is going to happen next, but yeah, I think the guys have explained the reasoning probably behind the decision to turn it down, and the problem being that there is such a discrepancy between some of the clubs. Obviously, the promoted clubs last year from League One into the Championship, they're going to need financial support just like the teams down at the bottom ends of League Two. So that's the problem. Everyone's going to need some kind of financial support. But in terms of that offer, if we're talking about 250 million, 50 million where 30 million of it is grant seems well short. And they were right to be quite noble, I suppose, and fight the corner of their members.
All right, it'll rumble on. Ellie and George, I'm sure we'll have more on it on Thursday. Let's talk about actual football, though. We'll start in the Championship.
This season, the Premier League's going to be a little different. But at Paddy Power, we're trying to look at the upside. Avoid unnecessary journeys. That's Fulham's trip to Anfield off. Self-isolate. Some midfielders do that very effectively. Avoid European travel. Shouldn't be a problem for Everton fans. When you think about it, not that much has changed, really. New normal, same old football. Just like Paddy Power's Acca Cracker. Get a free bet if one leg of your 4+ fold Acca lets you down on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Min odds 1-5 on each leg. Online exclusive excludes shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, sponsored by Paddy Power and part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Championship headlines: Bristol City and Reading remain unbeaten, but both could only draw at the weekend. It's Hute in and Hute win at Forest.
Lolly cuts inside, Lolly has a go, and Lolly gets lucky.
In the Gary Monk derby, it was Monk who came out on top after Sheffield Wednesday beat the Blues. But in the Nathan Jones derby, it was the Ex who scored after Stoke bested Luton. And at Carrow Road, 200 fans piled into the hospitality suites to watch the Canaries at Rotherham, because you can't have fans at grounds, but you can have them watching on a screen in the stadium. More of that happening this coming weekend too. Adrian, on that, it's a nice idea to watch on the screen at the ground, get a bit of atmosphere, etc. But it just kind of underlines the stupidity of not being able to watch in an open air setting.
Yeah, it seems crazy, doesn't it? It's so frustrating for all concerned. And the need for that bailout money would subside, wouldn't it, if clubs were allowed to even bring in a fraction of the fans that they used to have. You know, 1,000 fans inside any football stadium, big or small, is very manageable. And 1,000 paying customers to a League Two side or even a League One will help, won't it? It does seem daft. I saw clips of Dulwich Hamlet's women's team in the FA Cup action at the weekend, almost 600 at the stadium watching that game in a non-league ground, and it all went swimmingly. I can't really believe that we're going to have to sit and wait until the new year for any fans to enter EFL stadiums. It seems a nonsense.
Let's get on to the games then. We'll stick with you, Clarkie, beginning at Kenilworth Road. Nathan Jones, old club Stoke, beating Nathan Jones, current club Luton 2-0. If you're listening on Thursday, you were promised Nathan Jones today. You can probably guess why he didn't fancy talking about the match again. Still, we've got Adrian to tell us about it, which some would say is even better. Probably wouldn't count myself as one of those people. But has Luton's luck run out, Clarkie? You know, statistically better team in all but scoreline, but just couldn't convert any chances.
Yeah, outrageous from Jonesy. I'm sure he'd come on another time. We wouldn't have dwelled on this game. He had nothing to worry about. No, Luton weren't disastrous, were they, in this game? 18 efforts, 7 on target. Just fine margins. But I'd rather... I don't think Luton have too much to worry about. They're going in the right direction. Brought in some good players as well during the window. I think they'll be fine. But Stoke, I mean, this was another really professional away performance. Yet to concede on the road in any match, in any competition this season. And they've played a couple of Premier League teams in the League Cup. So they really have got it down to a T. The keeper is doing well, Adam Davis, 9 clean sheets in 13. And I do like the way that they're set up. The spine of Stoke City's team is good. The three centre-halves at the weekend, Suter, Barth and Collins, a couple of youngsters in there, with Clucas and Obi Mikel in front. That's solid. That really is. And you know, when you look at the top end of the pitch, a front three of Powell, Tyrese Campbell flanking Stephen Fletcher, there's quite a lot to like there. So yeah, good on Stoke City. Another good performance. Should be noted that Michael O'Neill has lowered the age of the team. Quite a few younger guys in there now. Tyrese Campbell, still only 20, by the way. So yeah, it's looking good. What I'll say is that on home turf, they probably need a bit more creativity, a bit more imagination inside the final third. But the combination they used the other day with Powell on the left, being a bit more disciplined than he is when he's free, and with Tyrese Campbell, who's got a bit of pace about him, I think they've got something of everything there. You've got the target man, you've got a quickie who's got skill and can make things happen, and you've got Nick Powell who can be a match winner. So yeah, Stoke heading in the right direction, I think.
Yeah, and Totally Football League Show bingo for this season. We've ticked off the mention of a player whose dad was a player in Tyrese Campbell. I think we've done one of those literally every week this season. Barnsley 2, Bristol City 2 next. Bristol City's perfect record fell to Oakwell. 102 minutes on the clock when Corley Woodrow converted a penalty to ensure shared points. Adam Murray's first match in his second spell as caretaker manager. His team ahead, behind and then level. Flo, was a draw just about fair in this?
Yeah, well, before I was so rudely interrupted by the bong, I would have gone on to say that, yeah, it was the fair result and a really good result for Barnsley, given the circumstances. And I completely wrote them off last season on another football podcast that I won't name and gave them no chance of staying up. And they proved me wrong, and they proved me wrong playing really entertaining football. Obviously, losing Struber is huge, and I am slightly concerned about some of the managers that are in the running for replacing him, not because of who they are, but more because of the style of football they play, and then trying to bring that to a team that's been playing a certain way for a fairly long time now, and successfully. Yes, hasn't been a great start to season in terms of results, and I think this, I'm hoping anyway, is going to be a way to kickstart that season. And like you mentioned, Woodrow had to wait so long to take that penalty. So with all the pressure, with everything they've been through, having to wait so long to then finish in the way he did and having signed a new contract. And I'm just hoping this will give them a little bit of a bounce and whoever does come in can take them forward a little bit. But I do think they'll still struggle this season, but to defy a team that are really flying and look so good, I think it was a great result.
Yeah, just had a look at the odds for next Barnsley manager. Adam Murray is still in there, albeit he is behind the likes of Darren Moore, Danny Cowley and Eddie Howe. Just finally on this game, wanted the ex-pro's opinion on this as well as yours, Flo. We'll start with you, Clarkie. Corley Woodrow's penalty smashed high into the top corner of the net. Is that the most aesthetically pleasing type of penalty there is?
I think the most aesthetically pleasing penalty is in off the woodwork. Just smash it in off the crossbar or the post. It just looks amazing. But keepers tell you, don't they, that if you go for the top corner, that's the hardest one. You don't see many keepers diving towards the top corner, do you? Even when they go the wrong way. They don't dive towards the top corner. They dive towards the bottom corner. So if you're brave enough to go for height, you've got a great chance of scoring.
Flo, Power or Panenka?
Power. I love it when a player just absolutely thwacks it as hard as they can. It's just so satisfying and also a big risk. So I kind of applaud them for just, yeah, smashing it.
I got Kevin Pressman running through my mind now. Sam, did you ever take pens?
Yeah, I did. I was never particularly comfortable with taking pens because I wasn't a great dead ball striker. I was all about placement. So I never really wanted to take them. But when you were, I suppose, the main goal scoring threat at various clubs, or, you know, you were expected to step up, I did take them reluctantly. I think I missed two, one at Swindon, important game against Blackpool, and one in a penalty shootout. So I was pretty well and took some high pressured ones in playoff games, etc. But, you know, I never had the composure to attempt a Panenka, always foot through it and hope that the keeper dived the wrong way. But Panenka for me, on that subject, I think there's a Dwight York one against David Seaman that kind of doesn't make the net, if that makes sense. It's unbelievable. And I've just always admired players, even in open play, that dink the keeper regularly.
Absolutely. While we're with you, Sam, let's go on a metaphorical journey to Adams Park, where Millwall beat Wickham by 2-1. Wickham did at least get their first championship goal. Then the net fell down. Then the beast came on. And what else did you make of it, Sam?
Yeah, I thought it was the most creative Wickham have been so far this season, in comparison to the other games. Had a number of chances in the first half. And Millwall improved greatly after the break. I thought Jed Wallace again was their talisman. I thought Ryan Woods' position altered in the second half, which meant they compressed the game. They played in the opposition's half, which they didn't do in the first period. And I suppose that's credit to Gary Rowett's management, that they've began to show different strings to their bows, but more aggressive. And I thought it was telling, really, that Hutchinson had the most attempts out of any player in the game, and he also dealt with Akinfenwa when he was introduced. So, now, all in all, I thought Mill were really good value for the victory. And for Wickham, I think they will improve. They've got Gape to come back. They've got Ikpeatsu to come back. They need a focal point at the front of the pitch to enable them to play the way that's got them great success. To this point, they haven't had that. But I think signs that first point and that first victory is just around the corner.
Any idea why our mate Joe Jacobson had that goal ruled out?
Well, I thought Dean Ashton was brilliant on Quest, actually, to look at it and dissect it and say that maybe there was a hand grabbing the glove of Bierkowski, which, I don't know, I think the goalkeeper's probably big enough and strong enough to maybe shrug that off, but definitely goes on, and it's probably something that Wickham work on, the bloke who's standing on the goalkeeper's toes to disrupt him and try and stop him from getting off the ground. So probably just about the right decision, but really harsh as well.
Blackburn 0, Forest 1. Finally, a Forest match I want to talk about. I don't want to do it alone, though. So it's Miller time. That's Nick, of course, of Totally Towers and The Athletic. Nick, Houghton's in and Forest win. Is that a coincidence?
Probably not. No, I mean, the churlish might say that, you know, a relatively weak shot going in off a defender's arse might be not the most glamorous way to win, but that, you know, we don't like churlish people here. So, I mean, you know, on sort of balance of performance, Forest, I think quite clearly deserved to beat Blackburn on Saturday, and you know, as the old cliche goes, Forest will. Take absolutely anything at the moment, including a weak shot going in off someone's arse.
And that weak shot came from Joe Lolley. His fitness is going to be key, isn't it? Because the fact that he's been in and out with this injury problem for a while now really didn't help Sabri Lamouchi.
Yeah, and he spoke about this after the game, where he basically said he's since the start of what is now the first lockdown, he had been suffering from this problem, this kind of muscular problem that kind of prevents him from operating at full fitness, really. It's not really a sort of strain or a tear or anything like that, but it's something that requires injections, and apparently those injections take quite a long time to sort of to have any impact. So he's now had those injections and has, you know, looks all the livelier, because, you know, despite him being probably Forest's best player in the sort of 18-19 season, he was quite patchy last season, and particularly, as with the rest of the team, after lockdown. So if he can be back to full strength, then Forest will be very heavily on their way back to full strength as well.
It's nice to talk to you about a 1-0 win away to Blackburn, but it's not the real reason that you're here. It will please listeners to this podcast, I'm sure, to know that there's a new pod in town, specifically a Nottingham Forest one. Tell us about it.
Yes, this will be absolutely delicious news for that chap who complains on Twitter every time that Matt mentions Forest on the show. It's called Two Stars, a Nottingham Forest podcast. It's not just a kind of self-deprecating title, but obviously reference to, I don't know, what's it in reference to, Matt? I can't think of anything that might be in reference to.
Yeah, Nottingham Forest have won the European Cup on two occasions. It's oft forgotten. I always like to remember it by thinking it's double the amount that London have won and the same as Juventus. So
yes, one for each decade since they've been relevant.
That's a cheap shot.
Sam's not going to be on the new podcast or this one for much longer.
And if we're talking decade span, it's actually been 3 decades since we're out of the Premier League. So, you know, joke's on you, Sam.
Get another star.
So, yes, from this Thursday being October the 22nd, a new Forest podcast will be coming out, produced by The Athletic. It will feature Matt Davis Adams as the presenter, Paul Taylor, the Athletic's Forest correspondent, kind of telling you everything that's going on at Forest and, you know, detailed breakdowns of the games. And then there'll be me on what we'll call a sort of roving role at the moment. So we'll have interviews, analysis, insight, all that kind of stuff.
Really looking forward to it. It is 2 stars. It'll be out later this week. Will it mean that we don't talk about Forest so much on this podcast? No.
Absolutely not.
Nick, thank you for joining us. I'll speak to you on Thursday.
Speak to you then.
Nick Miller of the 2 Stars podcast there. Whilst we're in the East Midlands, some breaking news for us at least. Wayne Rooney will miss Derby's next 3 games after a friend visited him at home who tested positive for coronavirus. Rules him out of the East Midlands Derby on Friday. Get all the latest on that via The Athletic. One more Championship game from the weekend for us to have a look at. I get the feeling it might not take very long. Sam, you went all the way down to the South Coast to watch Bournemouth and QPR share a goalless draw. I would ask if you had a nice time, but I'm guessing by the scoreline, probably not. What was the highlight of the day? It doesn't have to have been on the pitch.
No, I've already told you about my snacks. That was just to emphasise how dull the game was. And I think, listen, I'm very privileged to be going to games before anyone writes in with a tyrant of abuse. But I am spending too much money on snacks. I'm overcompensating for there not being any facilities, clearly. So I had 2 wonderful yum-yums. Fans of 80s snacks will be all over this at halftime in the game, which was great. We seem to be dictated at the moment, me and my girlfriend, by whatever's on the bake-off. So we've had fig rolls for 1 week was my snack at football. Angel slices as well last season. So I'm hopeful they do yum-yums in this current series. But the football was not great, but I thought QPR shaded it. I listened to Flo's Open All Ours podcast on the way down. So thank you for that, because it gave me some good knowledge, having not seen
my pleasure,
Rangers
always.
So far this season. It was very good and very helpful. And I thought that they stopped Bournemouth, in particular Lewis Cook. The 2 wing-backs did nothing really. Stacey on one side and Smith on the other. And that was purely because they were pushed back by Chair and Asaya Samuel. And quite surprisingly, considering what I've read and heard about QPR this season, I thought Luke Amos was the best player. He was very important in closing the aforementioned Cook down and did some really nice stuff with the ball in terms of creating chances as well for Bond. So there was some good stuff, and I suppose another clean sheet when you compare how they started last season. There's some optimism for QPR. Not a concern, but there's probably 3 positions for 5 very good players now at the front of the pitch with the additions of Willock and Adoma. Obviously, there's 2 strikers to choose from, but the positions behind that, they're really well stocked. I would presume Chair will come centrally and play as the number 10. But yeah, not a bad performance. Bournemouth, a lot better towards the end when they had Danjuma on the pitch and Stanislas. And I just felt a little bit safe in their lineup with Gosnin and Lerma in the middle of the pitch. I think you probably need a bit more creativity in that side. And that's something I'm sure Jason Tindall will think of before Wednesday's game at Cardiff. So not a completely wasted journey.
Yeah, really respect your opinion on football. Not sure I'd say the same about sweets, given that you once said on this show that you don't like Haribo. Odd. Flo, you're a Ranger. 3 draws on the spin, no win since opening day. How are you defining the amount of liquid in your metaphorical glass at the moment?
You know what? Sam would know as he listened to the podcast. I predicted, I think, QPR to lose 3-0 at the Vitality. So we'll definitely take 0-0. As Sam mentioned, clean sheet, which is huge for that team. And without Lyndon Dykes, who, despite Mark Warburton saying he would 100% definitely play on the weekend after obviously playing in all Scotland's games and playing a big part in those games, no surprise that he didn't play. So I think having not had him on the pitch and obviously can't be as effective up front, I think there were lots of positives, and from what I've kind of seen and read, it was definitely Luke Amos's best game of the season. It's just unfortunate that he went off with a knee injury, and I think lots of people are worried it's quite a bad one, but I think they're finding out on Tuesday about that. And then Rob Dickey, who obviously they bought from Oxford for a decent bit of money. A lot of fans saying it was by far his best game. So there's progress and positives to take. It's just working out how they can push on, really.
Right, we're going to do something slightly different this week in terms of our odds. Because there are some midweek matches, we're going to build an acca. So I'm first up taking my pick from the Championship. Guess who I've chosen to win in midweek? Yes, Nottingham Forest over Rotherham. Flo, you're taking your pick from the Champ too, aren't you?
Yeah, I've gone for a risky one, and producer Abby, I think, did a shocked emoji face when she saw this come in. But based off of the progress that Wickham made and that defeat to Millwall, I've gone for Wickham to get a draw against Reading, because in an acca, you've got to have a big bit of risk, otherwise your odds are rubbish and there's no point. So this is my risky pick. And also in accas, don't forget that you can also put draws on too. People always think it's a win, but actually you can chuck a draw in there. So that's why I've gone for that. And I think I was watching the Quest show and what Dean Ashton said about Wickham playing like they're happy to be here and have won a competition. I think that's definitely true. And I feel like that too when I watch them. But I'm hoping there's going to be a bit more fight from them. And yeah, I'm going to go for their shock draw against Reading.
All right, we'll see. Abby, you've put those two into the Paddy Power calculator. What odds are they going to give us for those two to start with?
Well, as Flo says, you need to have a bit of risk in an acca, and Matt is not providing any risk with his Forest to beat Rotherham. That's 4-5 in Forest's favour. As for Flo's risky Reading and Wickham to draw, that comes in at 3-1.
Okay, two choices down on that, two more to go. That's the Champ done, League One on the way, but next we'll talk transfers.
It's the start of lockdown 2 out there, listeners, so grab your curryverse, dust off your lederhosen and fire up the umpire band. Thank you. Because it's Oktoberfest and our friends at Beer 52 want to celebrate the world's biggest beer festival by giving all Totally listeners a free case of 8 German craft beers. All you have to do is head to beer52.com/football and cover the cost of shipping, which is a mere £5.95. Beer 52, as you all know by now, are beer pioneers, and they've visited the finest small batch breweries in Germany to bring you ABK 6% Weissbier, Buro Brauerei's Weizen, Lemke's Spree Coast German IPA, and many, many more. Most of these beers have never, ever been seen in the UK, and with Brexit round the corner, well, it's unlikely you'll ever see them again. You can choose a light, dark, or mixed case, and the best thing with Beer 52 is that there's absolutely no minimum commitment. If you want, you can just take this free case, try the beers, and if you decide it's not for you, you can pause or cancel your subscription at any time. So head to beer52.com/football and get your free case of 8 craft beers today. That's the word beer and the number 52.com/football. One last time, beer52.com/football for Oktoberfest.
So the transfer window closed on Friday of last week. I've asked the panel to pick out a couple of moves of note. Adrian, we'll start with you. What's caught your eye?
Well, I think some clubs did some really smart business towards the end. I will pick out two clubs, if I may. Blackburn and Sheffield Wednesday. Harvey Elliott, I think, is a pretty smart acquisition. Someone that will add plenty, I think, to their forward line. Tom Tribal from Norwich also came in. Yeah, very good in the Championship previously, and he's only really just lost his place in the first team at Norwich. And Barry Douglas, who was fantastic, I thought, for Wolves en route to promotion, and then he ended up not coming to the Premier League and going to Leeds and not really playing for them. If he can recapture his form, then he'll be great. And for Sheffield Wednesday, I mean, they keep signing excellent players, in my opinion. Gary Monk has earmarked some real talents. Jack Marriott's come in from Derby. Still can't really understand why he's not been given more of a run there. And Aidan Flint at the back. So some good last-minute business from the Owls. And you have to say, looking at Sheffield Wednesday, they don't look like a team that's not capable of overhauling this points deficit. I think they're going to be okay.
How about you, Flo? Any moves stand out?
I completely agree with Adrian. Yeah, those two teams look like they've added so much. And Blackburn, apart from that result on the weekend, which I know you were pleased about, they look really strong. They look really strong, and they've just got a very whole squad. And I think they'll only push on further. I think one transfer that stood out for me, but for all the wrong reasons, was Colin Kazim Richards going to Derby, the Coca-Cola kid who ended up at Brighton off the back of the Coca-Cola competition when they sponsored the Football League. I just don't understand what Derby are doing with that. The week that they also let go of Jack Marriott, who I know let maybe fans down a bit because he wasn't quite as good as they'd hoped, and he wasn't as effective as he should have been. But it just makes no sense to me. Someone who's never, his goal scoring record is not good. He's always flying around between club to club. He's 34 years old. I just don't get it. And Derby do so many things that I just don't understand in a week where they've also taken out yet another loan. I just don't understand what they're doing. And it's just bizarre to me. And if I was a Derby fan, I would be pretty cheesed off because it's, not, it's just weird. It's weird.
It's a good pitch to get on the show again, Flo. How about you, Sam? What about any transfers that we might have missed that you've picked up on?
In terms of a club doing great business, League One, I think Charlton obviously had to wait their time, bide a little bit of time. But I think to get the quality of Ben Watson, obviously came in a few weeks ago. Brilliant signing, considering he was running championship games at times last season for Forest. Innes from Crystal Palace. Smith, a player I'm sure Flo knows well from QPR, who is a very talented boy, just hasn't had a run of games, unfortunately, at QPR or at Wickham. Omar Bogle, another one. So I think they're looking really strong and have to be contenders straight away with the squad that they've been able to put together. Two other individuals that I like the look of, Carter Vickers to Bournemouth, brilliant for Luton last year. They were desperate to get him back, so that strengthens them. Not that they're too short in that department, but I think he's an excellent signing. And one for me and you, Matt, Casey Palmer to Swansea. Seems to come up every season, every other month when he makes a new move, hopefully under Steve Cooper, who I'm sure knows of Casey's work through the England ranks. He can be the one to get consistent performances out of a bloke who's got so much talent. It's a real shame that he's not done it consistently in the Football League just yet.
Yeah, if you wonder why Sam and I have banged on about Casey Palmer for such a long time, just put Casey Palmer goals into YouTube and you'll see why. Okay, let's file away the transfer chat till next year. Next today is what the French would call Ligue 1 if they were referring to the third tier of English football in their mother tongue. It's League One, basically.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker and now ad-free on The Athletic. This is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis-Adams.
League One headlines. Ipswich top the table. The Tractor Boys put two past Stanley to claim their fifth win of the season.
This is a chance, and that's the second for Ipswich Town. Well, the Accrington defenders look at themselves and look to point the finger. Sykes it was that should have got it away, but Sears is the one to profit.
Meanwhile, propping up the rest of last season's beaten playoff finalists Oxford, who've just got 3 points so far. Their latest loss coming to Peterborough, whose Project Vengeance is still firing on all cylinders. And MK Dons and Shrewsbury got their first wins of the season, and it's with the Shrews where we will start. Flo, you were at their game at the Kyan Prince Foundation Stadium, where they beat Wimbledon by a goal to nil. Leon Clark got it late on. Were Shrewsbury worthy of all 3 points here?
No, not at all. much like Sam at the Vitality, it wasn't a classic.
Any yum-yums?
No yum-yums. I had zero food. I had some water and a cup of tea, and that was the full extent of it. But yeah, the Dons have had such a good season so far. I mean, the fact that it took them 12 games last season to get their first win and they've already bagged two, it is great. So there's lots of positives, but those are the sorts of games that they need to make sure they just see out and get the 3 points. They had way more chances, very good chances as well. Joe Piggott, who's in such good form and is really lighting up League One, he came close a couple of times, caused lots of problems, but yeah, they just couldn't score and unfortunately paid the price. And a striker who's played pretty much everywhere in England and a man who I didn't think was going to score based on kind of his lack of form so far this season. And he came up trumps at the back post, and Sam Ricketts at the end of the game was talking about how he was actually kind of annoyed at Clark because he was standing in the wrong position. He didn't want him to stand at the back post, but Clark said afterwards that he was mixing things up and obviously ended up paying off. But it's quite funny because Sam Ricketts got a yellow card, the first yellow card of his career, managerial career, and he was saying it was because the referee laughed after giving a free kick, and Ricketts said that he didn't think it was very professional to laugh after giving a free kick. And Ricketts certainly has the nose of a man who has headbutted a few people in his time, so I would not want to mess with that guy. But yeah, first managerial yellow card, so there's a first for everything. So he's off up and running on that one as well. But yeah, not a classic, but I mean, all in all, Wimbledon fans must be so chuffed with how their season's going, and they're weeks away now to returning to Plough Lane. So it's just really positive over there.
Sam Ricketts, he needs to take a chill pill, doesn't he? He's moaning at the goal scorer for being in the wrong place when he was in the right place, and now he's moaning at refs for smiling. Crazy scene.
Come on, have a laugh, Sam.
I was going to say the Leon Clark's most famous moment when he clashed with Paolo Di Canio, I think in front of the Sky Sports cameras after a game, when he was playing for Di Canio Swindon, and Di Canio had told him that he had to do some extra running post-match and cue a big fracas on the pitch. It was absolutely glorious.
Big win that, actually, for Sam Ricketts. Only won two of their last 14. This was their first win of this season. Sam, you were looking at MK Dons 2, Gillingham 0. MK Dons' first win of the season, beating a Gillingham side that we showered with praise last week. Cameron Jerome, probably the star man here, and we've spoken previously about MK playing some pretty stuff without the penetration to go with it, and maybe they've solved that problem in getting Jerome in.
Yeah, spot on, Matt. I'm sorry if I bore the listeners, but it's a victory that I kind of smelt coming. I know exactly what they're doing there because I know some of the backroom staff at the club. The way they're playing is so reminiscent of Swindon 5 or 6 years ago under Mark Cooper and the now MK Dons assistant manager Luke Williams. So what they got at the weekend was a complete collective performance in every area of the pitch, completely dominated. One of the big reasons they're doing that is because of Richard Keogh's, that central centre-half, perfect for that role, coming out and playing with the ball. They've got a central midfield player, Kasumu, who can drop in and get on the ball as well. It's a carbon copy of what they were doing at Swindon. And at the weekend, they got the goals. Two amazing goals in terms of the level. If you watch the build-up, the intricate passing, they got the finishing touches with Carlton Morris and Cameron Jerome, as you mentioned, Matt. Putting the gloss on some brilliant moves. And what I did notice, and it's what something I commented the other week, they were really poor with their final ball or taking shots from difficult angles or from too longer distances. The most attempts inside the box so far this season. So I just think the calibre of chance was a lot better. And they've got a couple of players at the top end of the pitch who can be clinical moving forward. But I think the standout at the moment is Fraser in midfield, along with Louis Thompson. Great dynamic midfield they've got there. So I really like it. Like the squad, like the bench. I think that's a team very much on the up.
Good stuff. Swindon 0, Sunderland 2, meanwhile, Clarkie. We spoke a fair bit about Swindon last week. Sunderland, not mentioned them too much. I guess in their eyes, that's probably good news. Yet to lose a game and Phil Parkinson kind of quietly going about his business.
Yeah, I think you're bang on. They're ticking along very efficiently, aren't they, Sunderland? And they did this with a depleted back line. They lost Jordan Willis early on in the game. They had Flanagan suspended, so they had to do quite a big rejig, actually. Luke O'Neill, who we know as a flying right wing back, played left side centre half, so it wasn't ideal, but they pressed Swindon. We know that Swindon like to press and get about it, but this victory was all about industry and endeavour and the collective, and the midfield unit. I do like it at Sunderland. It's very hard working with Leadbitter in the middle, sort of anchoring things, all the experience in the world, and then Scowen and Power either side. I think that's a really strong League One midfield. And then, of course, you've got the two best players, the two players that they really rely on, I think, Sunderland, because they're quite boring. They're a little bit functional, aren't they, the Black Cats? But in Maguire, they've got a match winner who can score great goals. And in Gooch, they've got somebody who dribbles with it, who's got a bit of pace. and he comes up with big moments, and it was a fantastic cross from Gooch to Wyk to open the scoring. So yeah, Sunderland I think are looking pretty good. When you consider that Wyk played up top, they've got Graham and Grigg as backup strikers. They're in pretty rude health at the moment. It's just Maguire and Gooch. If something happens to them, will they have that creativity? That's my only concern for Sunderland. If they stay fit all season, I think Sunderland will be right up there with the likes of Ipswich and Peterborough.
All right, let's get back to our Paddy Power midweek acca then. Sam, I believe that your selection comes from League One.
Yeah, just off the back of what I said earlier, fancy Charlton, considering the squad they've got now, the feel-good factor after the 1-0 over Wigan to go up to Blackpool on Tuesday night and maybe head back south with all 3 points. I think they've conceded 7 goals in the last 2 home games, Blackpool. We know that they're a bit top-heavy, so expect Charlton to maybe take all 3 points.
Abby, what are the odds on that game and what does it do to our bet?
So for Charlton to beat Blackpool, the odds are 23-10, and you'll just have to wait a little bit longer to see what that does to the acca.
Thanks. All right, final stop, League Two.
The Totally Football Shows and The Athletic are delighted to be supporting Football Aid for the months of October and November. Bid now at footballaid.com to get your hands on some incredible football memorabilia, including signed shirts from Steven Gerrard, Luca Vialli, Gareth Bale, and even Peter Crouch's boots. Find out more, get bidding, and support the cause at footballaid.com.
League Two headlines. Cambridge back on top after a 5-star performance against Scunthorpe. Crawley also among the goals, putting 4 past previous table toppers Morecambe. Meanwhile, no new manager bounce for Paul Scholes and Salford. They suffered their first loss of the season at Port Vale. Scholes wants someone who isn't him to take over ASAP. And after much deliberation, Forest Green ignored the public vote and chose their new stadium name to be the Innocent New Lawn rather than the overwhelming favourite, Kevin. Boring. I had an Innocent New Lawn until my dog besmirched it this weekend, by the way. Sad face emoji. Poo emoji. Adrian, we'll start with the league leaders. Cambridge thrashing Scunthorpe 5-0 away from home. Another goal-grabbing performance from them. Good Brand Stats tweeting, Cambridge United have scored 5 goals in 2 of their 3 away League Two games this season. Prior to this season, they hadn't scored 5 away in the league since December 2016 and had only done it once since promotion to the EFL in 2014. Is Mark Bonner the exception to the rule that you should never appoint the caretaker on a full-time basis?
He might be, you know. I mean, his record is incredible. It really is. He's hardly lost a game since taking over initially as a caretaker and now full-time. He clearly knows what he's doing. It's a 4-4-2. It's built on hard work and energy. They press really well. You saw that in the game against Scunthorpe. A couple of the goals came from turnovers. They are looking very, very sharp indeed. And obviously in Mullin, they've got the most informed striker in the division. Ironside chipped in with a couple. That's his strike partner in this game. I want to talk about ages here, because I think it's quite important to have a balance. I've never really liked Barnsley's approach of just having, only signing young players, because I think it just restricts you. And I think there's a lot of value in having the odd veteran about the place, you know, role models you can look up to, like at Cambridge, actually, with Wes Houlihan. So for Cambridge, I've noticed that they've got a very settled team. 9 of their regular 11 are between the ages of 23 and 30. Now, Sam will tell you, that's peak football time. That's peak footballer age. I think most players are at their best between the ages of 23 and 30. So that, I think, is a big plus for them and sensible. As for Scunthorpe, under Neil Cox, all 21 players that he's used this season are between 19 and 25. All of them. There's not one player that's played this season over 25 years of age. And I just think that's daft. I really do. Especially in light of what's happened in the last couple of weeks. They got spanked by Forest Green at home. And there's a little bit of nerves there. Sometimes you just need those older heads just to calm everybody down. Say, look, chill. We're going to be okay. We're just, you know, leaders on the pitch just to regroup. They don't seem to have that at Scunthorpe. And lo and behold, they get walloped 5-0. And I don't think it flattered Cambridge. So, worrying times for Scunny. But Cambridge are onto a good thing.
Yeah, and you'd think that given that he's a rookie manager that he'd maybe want some experienced heads in the dressing room too, but no. Next to the battle of the new boys, Harrogate beating Barrow by a goal to nil on their brand new grass at Wetherby Road. Flo, in terms of how these two have done so far, obviously Harrogate have had a much better start than Barrow. Is that as simple as the fact that they've got the same manager that they had last season, or is there something else at play?
I think that plays a big part, and perhaps they've been dealt maybe a bit of an easier hand in the fixture list, and perhaps the situation of Harrogate not being at home as well was a positive in terms of playing at a bigger ground. I don't really know on that respect, but now they're back home, you think that things will only get better, and they're seventh in the league. And, you know, we talked about Wickham playing like they're happy to be there. Harrogate are certainly not doing that, and I hope this good form continues, because it's a sort of fairy tale, isn't it, with how their team are doing compared to, I imagine, some of the budgets that they're going to be facing in that division. And perhaps this is maybe just a bit of a step too far for Barrow, and yeah, with the added issue of a new manager coming in and then him missing yesterday because of COVID, it doesn't help. And games against your relegation rivals, sort of, and a team you came up with, are so important. So to then drop points and lose that game, it just makes the whole situation a lot worse. So, it's great to see Harrogate doing what they're doing. And yet another reminder of why it would be so great to have fans back, because so many local fans missing out on a real community club's first, you know, time in the Football League. It's really sad, really.
Yeah, very much so. Bolton's new boss, meanwhile, is Barrow's old boss. As we know, they've had an equally underwhelming start to the season. Sub Zach Dearnley scoring in the 95th minute to give Oldham a 2-1 win at Bolton. Sam, we thought that maybe they'd cracked it a couple of weeks ago, the Trotters, but it seems not. Is it still a case of all these new faces bedding in and that's going to take time, or is there something deeper at the cause of their early season struggles?
I just think that combined with the new manager and his style of play. I mean, I'm all for young, talented coaches being given an opportunity, but I just think patience is going to be a virtue with this one. I'm not sure it's going to work out. I'm not sure how many times teams playing this possession-heavy style of football in the bottom tier has prevailed or will prevail. And there's one thing certain: they're going to have to tinker within the system to get the best out of Owen Doyle. And I know it's a bit of a broken record, but the guy's had 3 shots on target so far this season after what he did at Swindon last season. And if I look at the 3-4-1-2, what they're playing, Nathan Delfonso looks the more likely to get goals because he's more mobile. He can go deep. He can run with the ball. Owen Doyle needs a supply line. And I just think it could be as simple of getting two wider players higher up the pitch. They're playing kind of defensively minded players in the wing back roles, the wide midfield roles at the moment. So I think something has to give, because 60% of the ball, again, it's the 4th successive game that they've had the most ball in the defensive third. It's all very pretty. It's all very patient, but ultimately they're not getting results at the moment. So yeah, I think you have to stick with the manager and hope that with a couple of little alterations, they start picking up some results. But not looking good at the moment. And Oldham, much more cohesive, much more dangerous as an attacking side. A brilliant winner from Dearnley, just as Bolton were pushing from a set piece to try and get the winner, and exploited really badly for that. So some shoots of encouragement for Harry Kuehl and his side. But yeah, big worries for Bolton, considering the calibre of player they got there. They're just not performing at the moment.
Abby's written, "Is Harry Kuehl" in the script. So I just thought that should get an airing, because it's a pun, but you don't need to answer that.
He's married to someone off Emmerdale. Of course he's cool.
Is he actually?
Shiri Murphy, was she in Emmerdale?
Yeah.
A good 90s
love knowledge, that.
Wow. Yeah, he used to go out with Marilyn from Home and Away, didn't he?
They must be like, you know, they must be absolute heroes in that part of the woods he's in then, because that's like Corey territory, isn't it? Oh, Emmerdale, isn't it? Emmerdale still, though.
Naughty's power couple.
On yeah, Marilyn, exactly. On Marilyn from Home and Away, I've been labelled Marilyn from Home and Away in my time. I think Marilyn from Home and Away had a sort of widest jaw, and I got ribbed for it many a time as a youngster when I was more clean shaven, I must admit. So there you go.
I was Abby's worried where that was going
with joy, because she's just found out the title for the podcast this week. I've been labelled Marilyn from Home and Away in my
I was worried, and I had reason to be. That's really not the way I wanted it to end.
Lastly, Adrian, for our Aki, you picked a League Two game from midweek. Which one is it?
Yeah, I've gone against my performers of the week, Crawley Town, Yemo's boys. I'm backing against them, actually. They go to Exeter. I just think Exeter on home turf are a good value normally. They've got a terrific record down there. So yeah, for me, they're likely to beat Crawley.
Abby, what's that as a single, and what does it do for our Aka?
This is another one where Paddy Power have got Exeter in their favour. It is for Exeter to beat Crawley, it is 17-20. Now put that all together in the Paddy Power Aka calculator, and that comes out at 43-1.
Wow, be worth it.
And of course, at Paddy Power, there is their Aka insurance, which is money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold fails.
As ever, we like to end the show by asking an important question. This week's comes after Wickham's net broke. I want to know, what have you broken in the name of football? Clarkie, you can have first run at this.
Well, disappointing. I break a lot of things in general life. I'm really, really clumsy. I'm always breaking stuff. But in football, I can't remember breaking anything. But I have almost broken a child's face, if that counts. I was always one for just lashing balls at the goal in warm-ups. I just wanted to smash a few in, and sometimes I missed. And on occasion, someone behind the goal wasn't looking. And yeah, I remember apologising at least twice to, I think they were both children, that I hit in the face. So sorry.
Was it an apology as in you put your hand up from 200 yards?
No, I went
over
there.
You actually go over?
Yeah, no, I went over there. No, I genuinely felt bad. I mean, you don't... Yeah, I think it's not particularly caring if you just hold your hands up from 25 yards, is it? You got to at least make the effort to go over.
Some distraught parent going, hang on a minute, Marilyn from Home and Away has just smashed my child's glasses. Sam, how about you?
Well, copious bones. The front window, the house I grew up in, used to go regularly. And unfortunately, on occasions when my sister was watching Neighbours in the front room, and then someone would have a wayward shot straight through the front window. But the one I wanted to speak of, I think it's a sending off that I spoke of before, a couple of weeks ago. And I walked down the tunnel and I kicked the fire extinguisher. And it's obviously protected by some kind of glass shield. So shards of glass went scattering all over the county ground tunnel, and you guys know me, I'm not the most aggressive man anyway, so the anger subsided very quickly and I went crawling to Linda, the club secretary. Sorry, Linda, sorry, I just broke something in a rage. So that was my reaction to a dubious red card.
What was Linda's response?
Linda was an absolute genius, so I'm sure she accepted my apology wholeheartedly and probably gave me a pass because I was the top goal scorer.
It reminds me of that story, the best bit out of the excellent documentary, The Test, when England produced that amazing comeback, wasn't it, through Ben Stokes and Justin Langer, the Aussie coach, in a fit of anger, booted the bin and loads of stuff came out. And his immediate reaction was like yours, Sam. It was, what have I done? So he just sat there on his knees, picking it all up and putting it back in the bin. Yeah.
Flo, I'm guessing there's been some QPR mugs that have been smashed during the concession of late goals, etc.
Well, you know what? I don't know how I can follow those two, but I think for me it's more breaking of the rules. I spent a good part of my teenage years and early teens buying away tickets that were meant for under 16s, but baby face, you can get in on that. Fiver for an away ticket. I'm not missing out on that bargain. So sorry to the EFL and a lot of away clubs, which probably hadn't got their value for money from me, but we got away with it up to a point, and then one pesky steward at the Etihad, when on the final day of the season, that 2012 big finale, my brother was caught out by the security guards, and he eventually made it in, but he had to pay an upgrade. But yeah, it would be the rules were the one that I was breaking the most regularly.
As for me, just my heart, just every week for 21 years and counting, just broken and shattered into a million pieces. Do join us for Two Stars on Thursday, though. It'll be a cheery upbeat podcast about Nottingham Forest. That's it for today. George and Ali will be back with the Totally Football League Show Extra Time on Thursday. We'll meet again at the same time, same place next week. For now, though, from Flo, Adrian, Sam, Abby and me, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and by following at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football League Show is a Muddy Knees Media production.
I'm Faye Carruthers and I'm here to tell you about the next big thing. Well, actually, this lot are here to tell you all about the next big thing.
I think he can go straight to the top and I think the ceiling with him is so high.
I do think he's going to be an England international at some point. He really is that good.
The question is, do you loan them out or do you keep them in-house?
People within Arsenal are really, really rooting for this guy.
The next big thing is here to tell you about the future stars of the global stage, the next headline makers at your club, and give you all the information you need to know so you can impress your mates down the pub. You know, when we're all allowed back anyway. Until then, subscribe to The Next Big Thing so you can be ahead of the game. Bit like the footballers we're talking about, really. That's The Next Big Thing from The Athletic, available now on all podcasting platforms, or get it ad-free via The Athletic app.
Muddy Knees Media.